This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello,
halflings! Liv, if you're going to do it, I'm going to need you to commit with me.
A simultaneous one!
I'm going to need you to commit with me. You got to
go. It's me!
There we go. It's also me.
That was Olivia brilliant. Kennedy.
And Jasper William Cartwright.
And Jeremy Cobb!
Oh, and I was going to say, we are joined today by...
We've ruined the sanctity.
We're joined by ourselves.
But
you call me Liv. Hi.
But Polarity Bear calls me Encyclopedia Cabanica.
Should we do that again?
We need to get as far away from this intro as possible by actually just getting into the episode.
All right, fine.
I have a nickname that I'd like to give myself. I'd like to call myself Screw You, Elon Musk. Sis is not a slur.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that for you, and I love that for everyone else.
Wow.
That's a great nickname. Can I do a nickname? I'm going to do a nickname for me. Yeah. No, wait. I want you both to give me nicknames, please, and then we can do one for Jasper as well.
Your nickname is...
I was trying to wait until you did yours before trying to throw mine out.
Your nickname is Foam. Liv Foam Kennedy. I'm looking at a lot of foam around me in this room. So that's Foam. There was no other reason. You really put me on the spot, Liv. I don't know what you want me to say.
Jasper, do you want to hear about my nickname for you?
My
nickname for you is Jasper Cartwheel because you're very acrobatic and there's a reason behind it. And you give me fucking foam. You could give me like a modicum of respect. I would really appreciate it, Jasper.
I have
I'm going to call you T. I'm going to call you T.
What?
Because you already have Biscuit.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
All right. Yeah.
All right. I'll take it.
Mine is Long Livia, the Queen of 3BH.
I think Jeremy's
was better. I think honestly, like impartially, I think that Jeremy's is like slightly better.
How dare you? Mm-hmm. Foam is an adorable nickname.
You sticking with foam?
Hey, what's up? This is my buddy Foam.
This is Foam. He's soft and delightful, and he's good at absorbing sound.
Yes, that's what Foam sounds like. Hey, it's my buddy Foam.
Shit. Well, that's classic Foam. That's classic Foam.
Oh, man.
Classic Foam.
Well, speaking of Elon Musk and potentially white people with some questionable feelings and insecurities, we are going to do a classic 3BH episode today. We're going to be talking about controversy.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
And more importantly, the controversy surrounding the new book, which is being released, which is sort of like a tell-all book about the creating of shows in Hollywood. I think it it does focus mostly on Lost, or it focuses entirely on Lost. I'm not actually sure, because from the article that I've read, it's all the stuff is referencing Lost, but I don't know if it does reference other things. But it's a book called Burn It Down by Maureen Ryan, and it has some pretty revealing things about the production of the show, the hit show Lost, which came out in, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, 2005?
I actually 2004? Had said 2005 before. Yeah, you were. It's 2004.
It is 2004. Oh, cool.
Yeah, you were right.
And so, yeah, we are going to discuss a little bit about kind of like why Lost as a show is kind of still relevant to talk about today, because it's a pretty seminal TV show in the kind of canon of TV shows, and also some of the issues that are explored within this one. Because I think it's actually a topic that we haven't really talked about, because it's a slightly different thing to the stuff we explored within the Fishboy saga. If you haven't listened to, maybe we should even drop a link in this, but that was basically exploring some of the controversies around, remind me the actor's name,
one of them was Fish. Was
Ray
was,
Fisher?
John Boyega. Ray Fisher.
Ray Fisher
and John Boyega. Mm-hmm. Both, mainly Ray Fisher.
Ray Fisher and John Boyega in Star Wars and the DCEU generally. Mm-hmm. Those were kind of slightly different cases, and I think this is an interesting one, because it's a bit more of a look back on. How things used to happen, and also it's a very interesting case study, I think, because we have Harold. I can never pronounce his last name.
Harold Perrineau.
Perrineau. That's it. Perrineau.
I've never heard somebody say it out loud.
I don't think I have either. We have Harold Perrineau, or Perrineau, who was coming into this show as the biggest named actor in the show, and still kind of suffering from a lot of similar things. So I'm going to throw it over to Jeremy to get us started. Jeremy, do you want to give us a little overview as to Lost as a show, and why back in 2004 this was such a revolutionary thing, and why it's relevant for us to be talking about today?
I would love that, because I just up top, I want to say, never watched Lost. The most I know about Lost is literally my good friend Rachel was obsessed with it when we were growing up, and like it was a roller coaster just seeing her emotions on it, and that's my reference. So yes, Jeremy, tell me
Liv,
more.
Please be the voice of the audience today. And if we mention something that makes no sense, feel free to ask the question. But just know,
hey, what's up
we
with that, huh?
won't know. Because
there's a good chance it may just not make sense.
Okay, sure.
A lot of stuff in the show didn't make sense, but that's part of the charm. Anyway, Jeremy, take it away.
So Lost premiered on ABC in 2004. It was an ensemble cast. There's actually a case to be made that Harold Perrineau was one of the two biggest names on that show, because also in the cast of that show was Dominic Monaghan. 3BH guest extraordinaire, and of course Mariadoc Brandy Buck in the Lord of the Rings series. So he was coming in hot off of that.
Wow.
Because I think Return of the King had come out the year before.
Wow.
So it's a good chance. Yeah, definitely. I think would throw him in there.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So they were, but it was an ensemble show. It also was one of the shows that helped establish J.J. Abrams, who, you know, like him or hate him, he is one of the biggest, the biggest blockbuster directors of the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
10 plus years, really. But Lost debuted. It is a show about a group of people who were on an airplane, a flight called Oceanic 815, that mysteriously crashed on an island. This island contains numerous mysteries, and the show concerns the survivors of that crash trying to not only survive on the island, but also figure out the myriad mysteries. Mysteries include a bizarre four-toed statue, a polar bear,
which,
that is just,
by the way,
living on
Jeremy
the island.
Actually has the exact reason for that, and he's going to reveal that at the end of the show. So you have to keep listening if you want to actually definitively find out the polar bear was on the island. That is going to happen confirmed.
Why is there a polar bear?
Yep, I'll
on
let
an
you
island.
Know at the end of the show. Stay tuned. I'll tell you in a bit.
We're going to reveal
island.
It at the end of the show. Okay. We're going to reveal it at the end of the show.
Right.
It's the big,
can't
big
wait to find out.
Reveal that Jeremy has lined up for us. So.
there's a smoke monster who that exists on the island that has like strange mechanical sounds that accompany it. There are suspicions that there might be other people on the island, and those mysteries just compound and compound over the length of the show. And what makes the show, I think, so gripping is its reliance on two things. There are two main drivers for this show. Number one, like I was saying, the mysteries. Lost has... I've never seen so many cliffhangers in a single work. It's like every commercial break has a cliffhanger with a specific musical sting. They have the trombones coming and go. They have every episode ends with the most intense cliffhanger. It is edge of your seat. What is going to happen? And they keep you on the hook and they're extremely good at it. But number two, and honestly, I would say the best part of the show, the characters. Every single episode focuses on a different one of the survivors and jumps back and forth between their time on the island and their lives before the island. Yeah. And this continues throughout the show. This is, you may recognize this as the exact model that Orange is the New Black just straight up stole.
It
is the exact format.
Yeah.
The exact same format. And in both cases, you have a multiracial ensemble cast with where we're focusing in on what's happening in the present day with all sorts of tension about, ooh, what's going to happen? And then all these questions of, who is this person really? Mm. Oh, my goodness. It turns out this person who's walking on the island was actually wheelchair bound and was actually paralyzed from the waist down before they got here. Oh. This is and a huge twist.
And it's also really, really important to note that Game of Thrones did a very similar thing just without the diversity. So that's really also just... Good thing to note. No, because it wasn't a diverse ensemble cast of Game of Thrones. It was mostly a white cast.
It was a white cast.
And when I say diverse, I mean for a show today, it would be really diverse.
Yeah.
Like they had in the main cast, they did the three main trio, which does come up. They were not the main trio when they were cast, but the group that became the main trio were in fact all white. But you had
That's true.
Yeah, no, of course, the main four. No, absolutely, yes.
But we also had major black characters. We had two major Korean characters who were some of the best characters on the show, in my opinion. We also had one of our number five or six main character was played by an Indian man, I believe, but the character was Iraqi. Which for like a post 9/11 show to have an ex-military Iraqi character as one of your main heroes on an American network show. Yeah, really groundbreaking in a lot of
ways. And also, I was worried, this is some slight spoilers, but I was worried that Saeed's character would definitely come across in a certain way because he is pictured like in the first series. He's very much like the scene is kind of like the violent one because he's, but to be fair, that's partly because he's depicted as the only one who is like ex-army or, do you know what I mean? Who's had that kind of training before.
I was going to ask if he was villainized at all, but yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I think there's definitely a point in season one where he's like villainized, but it's very quickly he's very quickly humanized after that in terms of like why he did it, and actually it turns out to be a good almost like a good decision because they find out something they needed to find out, which you know would have like helped him, and do you know what I mean? So it turns out there is like reasons, and it's not just like, oh, he was just violent for the sake of being violent. He's kind of forced into it, so it's a very different dynamic than your traditional
Even then, he is out-villained by other members of the cast.
Yes.
Oh, like, the big villain thing that he's doing, some people are kind of like, nah, I get it, because the guy he's doing it to is such a dick.
It might have been the case that, like, because the only example I have for this is when in the first season of a show, the show won't overtly say this character is queer because it doesn't want to, like, in quotation marks, put off the audience, which obviously it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But like, in the next few seasons, it just goes ham with like, oh my goodness, gay everywhere. But like, is this kind of like, it might be a thing where they were like, oh yeah, actually he's super violent and like you justified maybe not liking him, audience. But then it's like, actually, just kidding. We played you. You know, that is it that kind of thing?
I actually think you've hit on something there, but I actually think what's weird, and I think what we're going to get into, is I think actually the exact opposite of that happens with Lost, which is where you started out with this like super multiracial cast who all had like really interesting and compelling storylines, all had loads of stuff going on. It was really intriguing and interesting. And then slowly but surely, we kind of filed a lot of that stuff away and just got into a kind of more traditional show with like main characters and people definitely getting more than other people, and that's actually a lot of the cause for the tension that's discussed within this article, which I think is which almost I think is fascinating, because it starts out as this like beautifully vibrant show of like, you know, all these people, and then it does becomes and focuses a lot more, and it kind of seems like that happened in terms of like, because there's a bit of a in this article, we'll put a link to it, the one that we've or at least I've read through is from Vanity Fair. I think there's even a description of it changing after the first season when certain like kind of people behind the camera left and other people came in. So I do think that there's also part of this was potentially due to like a kind of crew change as well as any as much as, or like an executive change, sorry, as much as anything else, which I think is interesting and worth discussing.
I just want to quickly sort of cap off the Lost intro by saying the show was massively popular. It was hugely acclaimed, won a pile of Emmys, both for like technical stuff and for performances. It at one point, it's two of its major supporting characters were basically trading off wins from year to year for Emmy wins for best supporting actor in a drama. And it was really one of the last water cooler shows, which I'm not even sure if that's a term that's used these days, but essentially what it means is the show that everybody watches, that the next day everybody gets to work and they're like, whoa, did you see what happened on the Lost?
Yeah. I mean, like Game of Thrones would have been one, right?
Game of Thrones was probably the last one.
Yeah.
Lost was like one of the last ones, especially one of the last ones to be on network television. Because there's a difference between like network and cable on American television. Network is just the viewership numbers tend to be higher because you don't have to pay for it in the same way, whereas you have to pay for cable channels. So your viewership is almost always going to be on network, which means your shows are almost always going to be broader in appeal. And so for such a like a show that's supposed to be super broad in appeal to be really like concerned with its characters and like really focused on really strong writing for the most part, and also, like, having a diverse cast from the get-go, many of whom make it to season six. It ran for six seasons. It was a huge deal. To this day, many people will still say, at its best, it was one of the best shows probably ever, or at least of its era. At its worst, it was very disappointing. You want to talk about Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones sort of replaced Lost as the most hated ending. How I Met Your Mother might have actually replaced Lost, and then Game of Thrones might have replaced How I Met Your Mother. But
I actually never
got
to the end of How I Met Your Mother.
I'm so vindicated because the first two I haven't watched, and then I was like, I'm glad that I missed that disappointing ending. But Game of Thrones I did watch, so never mind.
I will say, I do think Lost's ending works if you go to it with the mindset that the mysteries are not the important thing, but the people are the important thing. If you care about the people, it's actually very satisfying.
I had a much different experience because I came to this watch later. We binged it during lockdown, and it was very much the case that, like, Jade, my wife, explained to me, you know, listen, don't expect any answers to this stuff because you're not going to get it. You know, and I was like, okay. And so going in with that mindset was kind of like fun for me, just being like, oh, okay, I can just kind of imagine into the space that's left. And there is huge gargantuan spaces left in like the plot and story that they're just never really explained or answered. But I think if you go in with that, I think it's a lot more enjoyable. I can absolutely understand that if you're watching this like on a week by week basis, how you would get to the end and be like, what in the Christ was that? What the hell? Like, that makes no sense whatsoever.
This is a complete side note, Jasper, but that's the first time I've heard you refer to Jade as your wife. Like, it's so exciting.
There we go. My wife. Yeah. It's my fun wife. To say. Yeah. I love it. My wife.
I actually came to the show in a similar way in that I started watching it right after it ended. I had a bunch of like teachers and classmates back in high school who loved the show and then were really upset at the ending. And I found that really funny. And so I then decided to start watching the show. I was like, now that it's over, I'll watch it. And now that I know, I didn't know what the plot was. I just knew that none of the mysteries ended in a satisfying way, which isn't 100% true. But I just went in and was like, all right, well, let's just see it. And then it was clear that, like, oh, the people are ultimately what matter. And then when it got to the end of the show, I was like, wow, this is really emotional. And I really like this from like a character standpoint. And I will also say from a plot standpoint, I think seasons 4 and 5 are really incredible sci-fi. That is, in my opinion, personal. Seasons 4 and 5 are fantastic sci-fi.
There were some big bits that I disliked out of the last two seasons, but like generally, I would agree. Like, it's well put together, and it's like there's just like stuff that I'm just like, meh. I kind of wish they'd made a different choice, but like I don't necessarily have a problem with the, you know, it's not like the choices they made are bad. I just think there was a more satisfying thing there, but otherwise, no qualms.
So that out of the way, please.
Yes, with that out of the way. Let's get into this article, which discusses the book Burn It Down.
Is this the Vanity Fair article?
Yeah, the Vanity Fair article.
So this is by Maureen Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We should start with the stuff around Harold, because I think it's just like I said, it's a really interesting perspective to come in thinking of, you know, this is a guy who had done Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet back in like 94 or 95, I think.
No, 97 or 98. It was late.
It was 98. Yeah. So actually more recent than that. Yeah. And I think had just done, let me just clarify the dates. When did the first one come out? Just on Matrix Reloaded. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. He is in Matrix Reloaded.
He's a big character. He's a big character in the Matrix, which obviously is pretty important.
His hair's so different, I don't recognize
him. He'd done all three Matrix movies by this point. He had done the first all 1 through 3 had already come out, which plays a big part, because in this article we explore the fact that basically he was kind of in this almost like a bit of a wave in the early 2000s, in the early aughts, of like big movie stars going over to TV, because TV was still very much viewed as this kind of like subgenre of movies at the time. And so to like tempt him over, he was kind of sold on this idea that it was going to be a very you know, this big kind of ensemble cast, that they were going to give people, you know, these big, rich and elaborate kind of storylines. And and I think honestly J.J. Abrams was a big part of the reason why he joined on, which I think is relevant, because I think J.J. has less and less to do with the show as it kind of moves on, and there's new showrunners that come in and are kind of mostly overseeing everything. So I think that's kind of interesting and worth noting. But yeah, he was kind of sold this dream. And then I think it's after the first season, it sort of starts to go downhill from there. Let me just see if I can find the quote here.
Just looking at the whole cast, there's so many people. Wow.
Yeah, in fact, there's quite a few of the actors noted that Harold had the biggest career up to that point. Possibly
Daniel Day-Kim
Monaghan
has had a great career
Daniel
since
Kim.
Lost.
Yeah.
Ian Somerhalder is in there? Wow.
Yeah. This is, he's fantastic in the show.
Michelle Rodriguez is in there? Okay.
Yeah. She's playing the Michelle Rodriguez character.
Yeah. It's the first time, and it's like, the OG Michelle Rodriguez character.
And while you're looking this up, I will also say another thing that was impressive about the show is we started to touch on it. These characters of diverse backgrounds were typically not portrayed in like explicitly stereotypical ways.
That's
like,
nice.
Sure, the black man is there with his son, and he had been an absentee father, but we find out later that was not actually his fault. He actually had wanted to be with his son, but the mother had left, and now he's stepped up to take care of his son. And so he's like a responsible, loving father who's trying to adjust from having been like not having had a child, now having like a 9 or 10 year old child and trying to raise this kid who's just gone through a tragedy. The Korean family, both like really interesting characters, again, starts seemingly more stereotypical, but then really develops as the show goes
and
on.
And actually probably exactly the same with Saeed as well. Like the kind of arc he goes on in terms of like being viewed as this slightly more violent military, you know, man from the Middle East, you know, being a very kind of, you know, especially around that time, but to the way they humanize his character is like kind of honestly incredible for a show.
Yeah.
Like we have stuff now, which does a infinitely more horrible job of trying to humanize, you know, kind of like Middle Eastern kind of people and characters. And do you know what I mean? Like it's, really crazy to watch this. I remember watching this back in lockdown and being like absolutely blown away by some of these portrayals. Yeah. I just found the quote here, which kind of backs it up, which is that one of the things that Harold says drew him to the idea was that he was told the story was going to be really equitable, and that he was very aware that up until this point there were kind of there were very much like distinct lines, and there was like a ceiling almost on like what a, you know, a black man like him could do within a TV show or a film or whatever. He said that he was really, really hopeful about this. And it was like something that's like so big that we've never seen on broadcast TV. And he said, I was like shouting about it from the rooftops. I said, I was such a believer. Aww. So I think like he was so bought in on like the idea of the show and what it was going to be. And then I think, let me just double check, I believe it's after the first season there was a wave of dismissals in which executive producer Carlton Cuse came aboard, who was a kind of industry veteran who'd done Nash Bridges, the Adventures of Briscoe County. And so he came on with Damien Lindelof, who people probably have heard of, like, of now. What's crazy is this was Damien Lindelof's first show as a writer. Damon Lindelof's first show as a writer. So I think, and I think some of that experience comes to bear because there is a, then what follows in the article is basically a string of accounts about particularly Cuse's kind of behavior and some of the things that he was suggesting and some of the things that he brought forward. This is a, like a shorter one, but I think it's on a similar path, but basically one of the writers on the show, Osuwu Breen, was a writer on the show, and basically describes how she got fired from the show but was happy to get fired after she had a bit of a backwards and forwards about basically saying that she was very angry in the writer's room because Cuse had basically suggested they had to kill off one of the black characters in the show because he wanted to leave.
Who's one of the best characters on the show, by the way?
One of the best characters. Honestly, such a shame. Mr. Echo was my favorite character. I was absolutely heartbroken. But Carlton Cuse actually wanted to literally, I'm not actually going to read the quote because I don't think it's necessarily, it's not nice at all, but basically described something close to a lynching. And this black writer was like, hey, maybe don't do that. And was kind of met with a lot of resistance. So I think that kind of goes to some way as to showing you what kind of environment we're in. And then to flip this back to Harold, this is something that's echoed by his comments, basically saying how he said that every single time he tried to bring up you know, race or the kind of growing inequality between characters in the later seasons, he was met with this very kind of pearl clutching response of like, oh, we're not racist, we're, you know, all of this kind of thing, which I think is maybe like the first point of like interesting conversation, because it seems so strange for me to have a show that was kind of built around this idea of diversity, even if that's not necessarily what they were consciously doing. You know, I think what they were doing is like, okay, we need to build a realistic snapshot of what a plane, you know, the kind of people that would be on this plane, and kind of inadvertently made the most diverse show in TV. But it seems, but maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know. What do you, like, I'll throw it over to you, maybe, Liv. Like, how do you think you go from creating a show like that and ending up in a place where, like Jeremy said, you have the four main characters are all white dudes, you know, what I mean? Or like white people. Sorry.
I mean,
three of it. Yeah,
one's a woman.
Well, one's a woman.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know much. I know the big things, the big points about the show, which I have heard by being in fandom spaces and stuff. Maybe, like you said, they unintentionally made a diverse cast. That wasn't something they were prepared for. Also with the whole pearl clutching thing, like it's so wild that people can't just take, it's not even criticism, it's just like I'm just letting you know this is a thing. Like, it's just the sheer fact of like that they were not able to take on any advice like that shows that they were never fully prepared to make this show, like,
they didn't know what they had, almost. Yeah, exactly. Like, they didn't know what they were actually creating in the first place, and then it kind of almost like it reverted to the mean. You know what I mean? It's, exactly. It's kind of the way that I feel like it, you know, how this kind of got, this happened.
Well,
got
yeah.
Made. I wonder if, what you're saying. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I wonder if just like a lot of like executive producers and whatever got their claws in, like was that maybe something that happened, like they were like, oh, it needs to be more palatable or something.
Well, that I think is exactly a phrase that was was used, if I'm not wrong. I'm pretty sure Harold says at some point, let me just double check, that the characters were, yes, they're told that the white characters were more relatable. And that he and his character wasn't as important. That was quite literally what was like quote for quote like said to him when he brought up the idea, because he basically goes back and says in the later seasons, like, hey, this was pitched to me as this, you know, this kind of show, and my character's got this you know. And actually this is something that really stuck out for me in the article, which is where he describes, and I'll let you just like jump on the back of this, Jeremy, because you brought it up in the first place, but he describes basically going back in saying, hey, I really think that my characters A is like his storyline is getting diminished, but also there's this whole section where his son, I mean whole section, it's basically his whole character, gets taken on the island, gets like kidnapped, and the scene after he gets taken, the way that it's written in the show is they then go into a Sawyer, one of the other characters, into a flashback of his character, and it's basically this, they set that up by having Harold's character be like, hey, Sawyer, like, what's up with your past kind of thing? And Harold turned around to the showrunners and said, yo, like, my son has just been taken, just been kidnapped, and we're floating out in the middle of the ocean or whatever, and I'm going to sit and ask about this white man's backstory?
Oh, my God.
Like, what?
That's, no.
Yeah.
And that is effectively what happened. Like and apparently he was given something like 12 to 14 hours away. They were just like, oh, you just do something then, kind of thing. Like, write something. Because he was kind of really saying, like, no, I really feel like this. And he brought up, like you said, Jeremy, this whole thing of like black absent fathers and how like that's a storyline that he's really like painfully aware of and doesn't want to perpetrate, and you know, all this kind of thing, and then him just immediately like kind of not caring. Do you know what I mean? That his son's just been taken really feeds into that narrative.
As soon as you said that, I was like, oh, they're not going to do that, are they? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Come on.
That was one of the most notable, I think, parts where he's like having to fight for his, because honestly, the way his character had been written up to that point, like almost every single thing he says is Walt, which is his son's name. He spends half the show yelling his son's name, wondering where's Walt, where's Walt, or oh no, Walt, like worrying about Walt. And then, which already felt pretty one dimensional, even though there's like so much more clearly.
And this is when Walt's still like there, by the way.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out. This is when Walt's still there.
And then when Walt finally gets kidnapped and he's Walt, like, you know, the biggest Waltz we've ever had up until this point. It's weird that he would then pivot to be like, so Sawyer, especially since you were saying about relatable, just for context, his character is a single father who's trying to reconnect with his son after having not known him for his whole life against his own will. The other characters included, the ones who would have been the more relatable were a serial con man who... I'm not even going to get into the big spoilers there, but a serial con man, some sort of like holy man who seemed to worship the idea of the island itself, who was also like a big outdoorsman, and whose own father had attacked
major
him.
Father issues.
Yeah.
Major father issues.
Another guy, a surgeon with major father issues, whose father had gone down to Australia and died, and he had to fly down and get his own father, and was flying back with him on the plane, on with his corpse on the plane. And then also like...
Which crashed, by the way.
Yes. And then also a woman who was wanted for murder. these are not...
Wow.
I feel like there are way more people who can relate to the love of a father for his son and a parent trying to connect with their estranged child, or just any child, really. Because once the kids get a certain age, I think any parent can find it a challenge to connect with their kids. Versus that, like, come on now. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that is truly wild. That is truly
I've been like watching a lot of stuff on YouTube recently about kind of like how Black characters are perceived in media, and like it's wild to me that like the default is just, oh yeah, white characters.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Some of the most relatable ones. Like, do you have any idea who's watching your shit? Like, I can't remember what book it was, but there was this author who, like, did, like, who wrote this book that did the default thing that books normally do, which is, like, only reference a character's race if it's not white. But she, like, subverted it so that, like, it, you know, if somebody was white, then she would mention that. And it was just, like, such a simple, like, idea that was just, it just points out, like, how wild it is that that's perceived to be the norm. It just that something that came up in my mind.
Yeah, no, I think that's
wild.
That's really, I think that's a really, really good
gonna
point.
Find and Liv, on the book was.
I wanted also to respond to what you said, Liv, about whether you think it was the cast, or sorry, whether it was the creators or whether it was the producers who motivated this change. Because there, we start to see that, getting back to the article, there was an actor whose name was changed to Sloane for the purposes of the book slash article. They say the thing that kind of created a rift in the cast was money. Perineo and Sloane told me that the cast had discussions about holding firm and asking for equal pay when salary renegotiations with ABC Studios began. According to both, promises were made to present a united front. Almost a decade earlier, the cast of Friends had done just that and wound up with equal pay for all six leads. But at Lost, the united front quickly crumbled. Ultimately, the cast ended up in a series of compensation tiers, and Perineo and Sloane said the highest tier was occupied solely by white actors. And then the next big thing was as the 25 episode first season progressed, Perineo noticed that a few of his castmates got the majority of the storytelling attention. It became pretty clear that I was the black guy, Daniel Day Kim was the Asian guy, and then you had Jack and Kate and Sawyer, all of whom got a good deal of screen time, as did Terry O'Quinn's Locke. Indeed, a writer I spoke to who worked on Lost during the middle of its run said the writing staff was told repeatedly who the, quote, hero characters were, end quote. Locke, Jack, Kate, and Sawyer, all of whom were white. Quote, it's not that they didn't write stories for Saeed, the Iraqi character, or Sun and Jin, Korean characters, the source added. Still, they recalled comments like, quote, nobody cares about these other characters. Just give them a few scenes on another beach, end quote. So it absolutely, there's absolutely the probability that there were executives involved, but it was 100% the mindset of a lot of the writers and creators as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And a cost, even. Like, if that United front crumbled, that means some people in that kind of cool cast gave in and was like, okay, you can pay me more money. And, you know, I think that's a very, you know, I think that all generally makes for a very toxic atmosphere. And I think that's kind of what is discussed a lot in this article, is just the fact that, you know, this isn't even so much that this kind of some overt thing, although there are very overt examples, but just the idea, like, I don't know how I would feel. Like, do you know what I mean? If I was going into a show as the high, you know, one of the highest mm-hmm. billed people, I then find myself less than like one season in, already getting onto a lower pay than everyone else, my role already diminishing, the promises that were made to me at the beginning when I joined already falling away. You know, I'm bringing up problems and being confronted with the line, I'm not a racist. So, you know, I think all of that really feeds into, you know, it's such a like, it's not even subtle, but like this really, like really, really toxic atmosphere that I think is almost impossible then to do your like good, you know, to do good work in. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't know if you would feel like you had anyone, you know, other than potentially the other kind of POCs in the cast that, you know, were like actual allies to you. And I do think it's worth maybe just at this point kind of throwing over the over to what Damon Lindelof has said, kind of like post some of these issues and things coming out. Just purely because I think it's an interesting response. It wasn't necessarily, not going to say it's the best, not going to say it's the worst response, but kind of interesting to, like, he basically describes how he, you know, that he didn't have a recollection and he was kind of baffled by the fact that some of those like he was responsible and some of those things came out of his like mouth, whatever. And then he openly admits that he failed basically in not creating what was a hostile atmosphere of people of color. And I was like at least refreshed to be like, okay, well, at least this isn't someone who's just like doubling down on the like, well, that never happened and they're liars and this is that and whatever. I was like, okay, you're at least acknowledging the fact that you were part of the problem and that you, you know, messed up in a big way on this. And one of the main reasons why I bring Damon Lindelof up, and I think Jeremy, you actually made this point already when we were off air, which is Damon Lindelof was the showrunner for the new Watchmen series, which is possibly one of the best explorations of being black in a, like, you know, it's like an incredible exploration of being being black, being a POC. It's like an absolutely, for my view anyway, for my money, I absolutely adored that TV series. An incredible look, and, you know, like really sensitive topics, incredibly sensitive topics handled in like absolutely, you know, stunning way. So, I mean, maybe it's growth. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to see if I can find his actual quotes because his response does. I found one of them in.
I've got them here. I can read them out. Hold on. Here we go. So I have no recollection of those specific things. This is when he admitted to. He said he failed to stop a racist work environment on the popular ABC show. I'm just saying that it's literally baffling my brain that. That they did happen and that I bore witness to them or that I said them. To think that that came out of my mouth or the mouths of people that I still consider friends is just not computing. That was like the main bit.
Well,
that
I think that's a testament to like how much like the world has changed since then, because like you could say something like that back in like 2005 or whenever this was, and it just not even think about it, just not even think, oh, that's something terrible that I've done. Like, yeah, you just wouldn't even register. So I do believe him when he says that, oh, I can't compute doing that, because in retrospect that was awful, but at the time it was probably just like, yeah, that's just how we do things.
I mean, it's probably even the same for Harold, right? Like a lot of these quotes and stuff coming out now, it's probably like a, you know, he obviously felt awful and it was horrible at the time. But in terms of like how bad and how kind of racist and how problematic it was, it doesn't really hit you until like, you know, I've had the same experience where I look back on some of the things that happened to me in school.
That
and I'm like,
okay.
Oh my God, that was not okay. Like that was so far away from okay. And I knew it made me feel horrible and I knew I hated going through the experience of time, but it never really truly landed, you know, to the extent to why it made me feel
so bad. It never occurs to you that you should have been outraged, you know, until afterwards.
Yeah, because you just go, oh, that's just the way it is. That's the way that like, the world works.
There's
like an assumption that no one's trying to harm you. Like you have the mindset like, oh yeah, everything's fine.
I don't know if I've spoken about this before, but there's this somebody came up with this analogy for like realizing later on that something somebody has done to you was shitty. Have either of you watched Father Ted?
No.
Okay.
I've watched Father Ted's a racist, but I never
I definitely used to watch Father Ted, and people in my family used to watch
No, same here. We have similar backgrounds. But
very.
But there's a scene where Father Ted kicks this bishop up the ass, just kicks him up the ass, and then he turns around like, "You kicked me up the ass," and he was like, "No, I didn't do. No, I didn't do that." And he's like, "Oh, okay." And he just fully believes him. And then he goes away. He does this thing. He's in a completely separate country, probably like ages later. And he's like, he kicked me up the ass. Like he like realizes that did actually happen. And then he storms back like, no, you did that. And it's like it's such a good analogy for like being like, wait a fucking minute. You did that shit. I think it was like one of those things, maybe just like, oh, fuck that. Actually, you know,
and I think it goes some way. Sorry, Jeremy, because I know you want to jump in. I think it goes some way to explaining why it's so important that we carry on having these discussions, and why it's so important that, like, you know, we are having this discussion now. Because what Damon said there is, I can't compute that came out of my mouth. You know what I mean? Because obviously he's moved on, he's in a very different place, all that kind of thing. But it's super important that he is aware that like he has that was there, that was in him, you know, and possibly unaddressed, you know, like he hadn't thought through where all that came from. And do you know what I mean? Like it's a really important part of like your growth to realize that you can, that you are capable of kind of going to that place, almost in the same way that like if I, you know, was to slip and make a mistake, no matter how long it is until, you know, since that thing happened, I want to know about it because I need to be aware so that I can make sure it never happens again, or that, you know, it might not happen in such an extreme. But it still could, you know, I mean, like little things, little moments still could happen if it goes completely unchecked. And the way that he responded to that question and to this, you know, to these allegations kind of makes me feel like that. You know what I mean? Like this is something actually that man really needed to hear. You know what I mean? To say, hey, like, you know, you've done some great things, but you're, you know, you have serious, serious blind spots. And, you know, part of those blind spots have led to some really, really unacceptable behavior, both on your account and on your peers' accounts. And like you said, you know, people that he still calls friends and probably still works with now, which is, you know, kind of pretty crazy to think about. Sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to throw out a couple of things. One is that Maureen Ryan had actually asked a number of cast and crew, and she kept a running list of words that different sources used to describe the show's work atmosphere. It was a word cloud. And she shared it with both Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse. Among the adjectives that came up a lot were cruel, brutal, destructive, racist, sexist, bullying, angry, abusive, and hostile. And this is to describe the experience of working on the show. And when it says, after I read the word cloud to Lindelof, he was silent for about a minute. He finally answered, referring to his behavior in the present. Quote, the way that I conduct myself and the way that I treat other humans who I am responsible for and a manager of is a byproduct of all the mistakes that were made. I have significantly evolved and grown, and it shouldn't have had to come up or come at the cost and the trauma of people that I hurt on Lost. Then he said, would it shock you to learn or believe that, despite the fact that I completely and totally validate your word cloud, that I was oblivious, largely oblivious, to the adverse impacts that I was having on others in that writer's room during the entire time that the show was happening? And he also asked, do you feel like I knew the whole time and just kept doing it? And it's Maureen Ryan really holds his feet to the fire here and is basically like, the fact that you didn't know doesn't really, I think she maybe seemed to question whether or not he actually didn't know, but at the very least was saying that he didn't, he did not, he doesn't let him off the hook. The fact that he was oblivious.
Yeah.
Doesn't
excuse it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think to an extent, it sounds like, at least from those quotes you just read, that he wasn't saying that was an excuse either. Like, it was, do you know what I mean? He was saying that, it shouldn't have had to come to that for me to realize. Do you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, honestly, and I'd be interested. Does it have anything about Carlton Cuse's reaction?
Yes. Because Cuse, I remember he had a couple of reactions, some of which I didn't like, but he did respond.
I've got to say, I think it's worth noting, for me personally, that feels like one of the least toxic responses that we've heard to this kinds of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of really taking a moment to reflect before you open your damn mouth. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like, taking a minute is a really important part of that. And I think that, like, you know, there's far too many people live in that reactionary space now where you end up making it infinitely worse. You double down, you just immediately launch into a tirade of apologies, which don't really mean anything. So, you know, I think taking a moment to reflect and also then kind of taking a second to completely and utterly acknowledge that was real and that happened and that was the case and that was his responsibility, I think is a very, very important part of this. Because it doesn't feel like, at least from my part, it doesn't feel like he's trying to seek some kind of like absolution here, which is something that I personally find very grating when it comes to these apologies and things like that. It's like the fact that he said I failed, not necessarily that I'm sorry. Do you know what I mean? I think for me, like, that reads better for me. Like,
you prefer an acknowledgement of failure rather than an apology.
But yeah, because I think the apology is like you're seeking an acceptance for what's become, and that you've moved on, and that's no longer you, and whatever. Whereas I feel like I failed is acknowledging, like, no, I failed, and I need to work on this. Like, there needs to be like a. I'm not saying that I don't ever want an. You know,
sometimes
ever
it
want
does
an apology.
Seem empty, like, though, like empty words, you know.
Exactly. I just feel like apologies have become this kind of, like, you know, in the kind of like world we live in now where everything's so reactionary, it's very easy to just immediately apologize without doing two things, which is fully grasping the totality of your consequences and also not actually meaning it or realizing why perhaps you need to issue said apology.
For example,
and so I think that, like,
YouTube, you know,
gotta start with
they're just
sigh.
Like, it's exactly, it just feels like
this is a really hard video for me.
So we need to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so for instance, this is a really good example for anyone that's over here in the UK. One of the most ridiculous things that's been going on in the world, which is there's all this scandal around Philip Schofield.
Oh, yeah.
It has been completely and utterly blown into a billion pieces and become this incredible thing where I'm pretty sure that someone did an opinion poll of British people, and Philip Schofield now has one of the lowest rankings of a public figure on the opinion polls.
Not to be
now to the point where he is below Xi Jinping of China. He is a less popular figure in England than Xi Jinping of China, which I just thought was
kind of baffling. I've never liked Philip Schofield, so I'm validated, but also I'm like, okay, everyone, calm down. Like,
he's a morning show co-host.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Who recently, like a few years ago, made headlines for coming out as gay on air.
That was previous.
Yes, and then it turns out that he basically had a relationship with a younger person on the crew, not like underage. I think they met when he was underage.
If this was a case of grooming, then not calm down, calm up. Yeah, no, fuck that. But like, yes.
But like, and basically, but it was a consensual relationship, but it was hidden from the public and apparently hidden from executives. Complete lies, obviously, because the executives know everything that's happening on set. Like, the rumor mill is crazy on set. Like, we've all experienced it. It's wild. But anyway, all this to say that it all kind of boils down to Holly Willoughby, who kind of claims to not having known anything about the scandal, does this direct-to-camera address being like, hi, are you all okay? Because I know you, like me, are probably really struggling right now. And it's just like, what the f- is this? Like, who is really not okay? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're not okay, Holly, because you've just been caught in a lie that you've helped perpetrate with your co-host, that's one thing. But, like, to kind of this endlessly vacuous kind of, like, are you okay? Like, the idea that this thing is as impactful on, like, the everyday viewer of this of the morning show, of this morning, whatever it's called, it's just kind of baffling to me and just shows a complete disconnect as to, like, why she needs to apologize or why, you know, he needs to apologize or whatever. So I think that's basically the point I'm trying to make with this example, is just that I feel that, you know, that apology and other apologies like it, like, you know, your classic YouTube apologies are, feel like they're very much damage limitation and PR as opposed to an actual acknowledgement of, like, what the mistakes were that were made and the and a presenting everyone with a genuinely healthy way of moving forward, which is, I'm not saying that Damon Lindelof, I haven't really thought enough about it, to be honest, to kind of come to a conclusion as to whether that's the right way or not. I'm not saying that is the right way, but it feels, at least for me, like a more representative and honest kind of summation of, like, where he's at, you know, what he feels like he needs to process before, you know, issuing and before saying, you know, fully kind of like closing the chapter on this thing. Because what I hate, the idea that I hate, is that all these people go, oh, cool, did my apology video. Oh, yeah. I feel good now. You know what I mean? Way off my chest. All right, I can carry on. And there's just like a slew of people that aren't okay because they are still being affected by this thing and that apology didn't mean anything. Mm. Anyway, that was a long rant to interrupt your point, Jeremy. But
so back to the point. Q's response to the word cloud was, it breaks my heart to hear it. It's deeply upsetting to know that there were people who had such bad experiences. I did not know people were feeling that way. No one ever complained to me, nor am I aware that anybody complained to ABC Studios. I wish I had known. I would have done what I could to make changes.
See, that feels that feels different to me. I think there's something different in the way that you, in the way that he's saying,
he doesn't take culpability.
Like, I would have done better. He doesn't, he doesn't claim any culpability at all. And also, I have, there's the quotes from the writer on the show that I spoke about earlier, who's saying he's happy to be fired in the discussing of Mr. Echo's, you know, show being taken off of the show. Like, she literally, like, a quote from her, she said, in the said, at which point, after a very vivid description was given by Carlton Cuse as to what he wants to do to this character, which, again, I'm not going to read, extremely unnecessarily violent.
God, what is
she said,
it's basically just lynching imagery and weird, unnecessary,
but way over the top and completely would be completely and utterly
Django Unchained
out of
sounds like it's something that's in Django Unchained.
Yeah,
oh
is
god,
that kind
okay,
of
yeah, it, for sure. But then she said to him, "You may want to temper the lynching imagery," and I was clearly very angry. So, like, the idea that, like, no one said anything, like, I don't know about you guys, but if someone said, if someone came to me and said something I described sounded like I was talking about lynching a black man, I'd probably take that as like,
like, I'd die.
You know what I mean? It's just, I just,
so
like, that is it, like, one, at least one example of someone actually saying something to this.
And I have a response from Q's, which is probably the point where I was he said, "I never ever made that statement above, and this exchange never happened. To further add to this lie and suggest that someone was fired as a result of a statement that I never made is completely false," adding that the implication is completely outrageous.
You can't, there's no way, like, so is this the same person who said it's wild to, like, along the lines of, like, those things never registered to me, I can't comprehend saying that saying that, those things. Okay.
No, this was Damon Lindelof.
Yeah, Damon Lindelof is the younger guy who kind of helped create the show. Carlton Cuse is the older guy who had previously been Damon Lindelof's boss, who was brought in early on in the show's run to help run it. Because Damon, this was, at the time the pilot was filmed, I think it was the most expensive pilot of all time. Pilot meaning the, the first episode of the show. Massive budget.
Like, that is, honestly, like, thinking about that, like, into the, like, I'm pretty sure, like, the Game of Thrones, that was, like, the Game of Thrones, but, like, the Game of Thrones pilot was, like, 20, I think, million. And that's in, like, 2017 or something.
That was in 29, like, 2009.
13 million.
Wow.
Yeah, but, like, 13 million at the time for a TV show would have been... crazy.
All shot, almost all of it shot on location as well, in Hawaii, which, you know... Like, you could get, you could run into some adverse weather that will absolutely ruin your shooting schedule. So anyway, there's more, though, because one thing we didn't mention is after Harold Perrineau, jumping back to him saying, like, hey, everybody, can my character please act like he loves his son and not reinforce negative stereotypes about black men and how nobody cares about black boys? Like, my character needs to. I'll do whatever you want on this show. I just won't be the black guy. And I won't do, like, that's... You know, come on. I'm good at my job. So as Jasper had said, they initially kind of blew him off. And by that point, he was so fed up that he just improvised a bunch of lines while shooting to to add that stuff in. And then they told him at the last minute. They added in. They added in another. Well, at the end of the right, like shortly before the episode was supposed to be like finished, they came to him and were like, "Hey, we're actually changing this from being an episode focused on the character Sawyer to an episode focused on your character. So you have to film an episode's worth of flashbacks in 2 days." And he said those were like 14 to 18 hour days that he put tons of work into. He's like, I refuse to mess this up. If you're acting like it doesn't matter. No, I'm going to sell this. This is going to be great. And he believes that shortly after that, he basically got fired as a result of him having spoken up repeatedly about this. And he thinks that that was kind of the last straw, him going in and being like, yo, guys. As a black person, and of course, immediately you got the Get Out white people all being like, "Oh, I'm not racist now. Come on!" Immediately backtracking, and he he argues that he thinks he might have been fired as a result of his complaints, and both Cues and Lindelof responded. Lindelof responded to Perrineau's comments saying. There was a high degree of insensitivity towards all the issues that you mentioned as it relates to Harold. Basically owning up that, like, yeah, we messed up. He added that every single actor had expressed some degree of disappointment that they weren't being used enough. That was kind of part and parcel for an ensemble show. But obviously, there was a disproportionate amount of focus on Jack and Kate and Locke and Sawyer, the four main characters, the white characters. Harold was completely and totally right to point that out. It's one of the things that I've had deep and profound regrets about in the 2 decades since. All in all, Lindelof said, quote, I do feel that Harold was legitimately and professionally conveying concerns about his character and how significant it was that Michael and Walt, with the exception of Rose, because Rose is another black character who shows up, were really the only black characters on the show. So he actually pretty much owned up to it. Let me see if I can find Q's comments.
And I think that's also a really important distinction, because I think it's very easy for him to turn around and go, oh, you know, well, there was execs who wanted this character, you know, these characters to be more, you know, I think there's a whole slew of like baked in responses that you could have to that question. And just straight up being like, yep, he didn't do it. He wasn't unprofessional. He did his job. He was great. And everything that he says is correct. Like, I think even just the fact that he outwardly calls him professional, I think is so huge. Because if we think back to, you know, the Fishboy saga that we covered extensively, one of the main things that constantly gets brought up about Ray Fisher was that it was somehow unprofessional for him to bring these things up. It was somehow breaking of, like, you know, confidentiality and all this kind of stuff to make these things public because he didn't feel like he had any other choice. And do you know what I mean? So I just think it's a really important distinction to make that he's actually willing to say, no, not only Because also, he probably would have been justified to be unprofessional. Do you know what I mean? He probably would have been justified to be like, hey, this is fucking terrible. I'm not doing this. But the fact that, you know, he makes a very good, makes a point of saying, no, Harold was very, very, like, professional and accurate in saying what he said and what he did.
And in contrast, this is what Q said. Q's also stated that he never discussed matters touching on race at any time with Perrineau, and that race had, quote, nothing to do, end quote, with the character's storyline. Quote, I do not believe he is in any way personally to blame for the way his role changed, end quote, said Q's, who also noted that Perrineau's feedback about that script was relayed to him by Lindelof. Q's did not recall discussing those specific concerns with the actor, and that revisions of the script were in part intended to address Perrineau's input. Quote, we heard his concerns and made changes to address them in the second episode of season two, and as we moved through season two, we reflected Michael's character as caring deeply about finding his missing son at every possible opportunity, end quote. He also disputed that he was, that Perrineau was fired. He said that he was bumped down to recurring status, but that does not line up with Perrineau's recollections. The actor said after season two, he was released from his lost contract and took other jobs. As the opening credits show, he was not part of season three at all. Wow. Perrineau did appear in several episodes of the strike-shortened fourth season, and he also appeared once in the final season.
There's like a slew of evidence that what this person is saying is just, it's just nonsense, you know, like, it doesn't line up, you know.
Yeah, and honestly, there's a lot that can be gone into about the, like, it's a long article. I highly recommend everyone read it. I don't think we said the title of the article itself. Yeah. On Vanity Fair, it's called Lost Illusions, The Untold Story of the Hit Show's Poisonous Culture by Maureen Ryan. It's an excerpt from her book. I strongly recommend checking it out because there's issues with the writer's room. Mm-hmm. Again, people of diverse backgrounds talking about their issues with hostile environments in the writer's room and scripts being rewritten and credit being misapplied and so forth. But I think tying this back in with not only like what, well, Jasper, like you were with the previous episodes we've done talking about the culture of racism in Hollywood, and sexism as well. Like misogyny is also an issue. Lost does have a lot of really great women characters, I will say. Like, for my money, some of the best characters on the show are women, but it is absolutely a white male show, first and foremost. It's interesting as a show that in many ways was kind of like one of the first, it's genre fiction. This is a show that in a previous decade would have been some obscure geeky thing. Like a weird, mysterious island with sci-fi and magic. And yeah, exactly. And Firefly debuted like around the same time or a few years before.
Yeah.
I think. So like this is big that this show was what it was. And we still see that these problems have been there all along. And like we said, and based on people's comments, it does seem to be a case of blind spots, or rather, our ignorance. People having privilege and not being aware of the things that they were doing and the harm that they were causing.
Yeah. I think my kind of like sort of, as we sort of start to wrap this up, and you know, I'd love to sort of just go around and especially hear some your thoughts as well, Liv, but like, this feels like a case of, you had a kind of experienced veteran in Carlton Coos who was very used to things being a certain way and happening a certain way. And I know what sells, I know what doesn't sell. You know, we've all, even in our careers, have heard those things, you know what I mean? In you know, 2017 or whatever, you know, I remember studying and being told, you know, oh, you know, you'll sell at the moment, or like, oh, I don't really know if you could be a lead, you know, all of those kind of things have all been, you know, that's nothing new and something that is constantly prevalent now. So if you had someone back in, you know, who's at the peak of their powers in the 90s, it probably goes some way to explaining as to why, you know, they were completely and utterly blind to this, and honestly it seems like not really willing to acknowledge either, given the responses that have, you know what I mean, that Q's is given to this, especially when you give, and the fact that in that article there are several kind of like witnessed statements from people completely contradicting Q's statements, like the fact that, oh, I never discussed this with Q's, with Harold. There's multiple quotes from Harold saying that he discussed these directly with Q's. And then I think on the other side, you have this first time showrunner who had this veteran, you know, who used to be his boss and now kind of technically his equal, who probably genuinely, I can, like Liv said, I can kind of believe that he didn't really have a fucking clue. Because also, this is what's insane. I've just checked this out. And so Lost's pilot is the sixth most expensive pilot of all time anyway. And if you adjust it to for inflation, it's the third most expensive. And this was handed to someone who had never written on a TV show before.
That's a lot of pressure.
Like the showrunner had never even written for TV. Like, it's just kind of baffling. Like, that in itself, I think, is one of the biggest problems and neglects, you know, issues with neglect on this show. Like, obviously, there's going to be issues with the way that this set is run and what happens on this set. And that's not me. That's not for me to diminish any of the work, you know, any of the what they actually what he was able of to produce as the showrunner. But this is more me saying that, like, when we're talking about positions of power and we're constantly banging on about the fact that you need to have people in those high up positions to make sure that there is that kind of like safety net, because I would bet my existence on the fact that there was no one above Damon Lindelof in the executive team who was of color. Like, I would bet my house on that being the case. You know what I mean? So if there's no safety net for this guy, this is his first job, and he's got this, you know, 90s TV veteran next to him, I think even just on paper, there's just like, oh, well, yeah, obviously. Like, obviously this is going to be a shit show.
And you're going to go with whatever the...
And that's not to excuse anything. Sorry for
interrupting you. You're going to go with whatever the person above you is saying. You're like, oh, they've got experience. They know what they're talking about. I know that I would feel, especially if that was like the amount of pressure that was on them, I'm sure that if I was in that position, I would have been like, oh, yeah, no, you're right. Whatever you say. Yeah. You know,
Yeah, adjusted for inflation, this pilot cost $22 million for a 1 hour of TV.
I would do whatever somebody else said. I'd be like, yeah, okay, you know.
Yeah, 1 hour of TV. That's like, honestly, that's like $500,000 a minute. Like, that's wild. That's like, and like, especially for that time as well. Like, nowadays, you could imagine a TV show having a pilot getting that kind of money. But like, because like, for instance, the one that's above it is Westworld. You can kind of like, that makes sense. But like, back then, crazy. And to hand it to someone who's now, that's the biggest revelation.
Big risk.
Like, they gave this to God. Why wasn't I born earlier, man? Like, why can't I get some of that? Like, why can't I get a slice of that? Hey, it's fine. I don't really know what he's doing.
If you want to bring a non-problematic loss to Jasper, like, feel free. You know, like,
Just come on, someone give me 13, 14 million to spend on a TV show. That'd
and then
great.
Jasper, I would like to audition. I can do it. But also, I want to be in it. I want to be in it, please. Thank you.
Okay, well, cool. It's going to be a TV show. The title is Phone.
That was my audition.
That's the tagline.
That's it, yeah.
That's the trailer line. That's the trailer line.
The catchphrase that Liv has.
It comes up saying foam. It's like the trailer happens, then it comes up with a big title saying foam, and then it's just it comes back to Liv. And then it cuts to black.
It's a sitcom.
That's the trailer.
It's a sitcom.
Love it. Biscuit and foam. Let's go.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, Jasper. Mm-hmm. I think it is clear that once again, that there is and has always been a culture of racism and misogyny and all sorts of mistreatment and exploitation in Hollywood, as well as many other industries. I think it's a lot of it is a byproduct of the society. So when I say a lot of it doesn't seem always malicious, I mean, the Q's comments about Mr. Echo are just flat out malicious. No bones about it.
Some
of it does seem like it's genuine failure and like ignorance. And I think that it is important to note, like, now that we are so far removed from the end of the show, because it ended, I think, in 2010 or 2011.
I think it was 2011.
Back when it ended, like, we're so far removed from its ending. TV has changed so much, in part because of Lost. Like, Lost helped. Lost was part of that leading to the era of peak TV as well. Like, Lost is absolutely a bingeable show. It is 100% a bingeable show, even though that didn't really exist at the time. And there are numerous shows, not just Orange is the New Black, that straight up rip off its format. But I think it is important now that we have some distance for, and for anyone who is in a position of power or in a situation where they have done bad things in the past, be more of a Damon Lindelof than a Carlton Hughes.
You need
to acknowledge the mistakes that you've made, and you need to like own up to them. Don't just be like, well, mistakes were made, because that is often, Maureen Ryan points out in the article, oftentimes people will phrase things, especially she points out white men tend to phrase things in a way that removes culpability from themselves, even as they acknowledge that something bad was done. They're like, oh, something bad was done, not I did something bad.
It's like the equivalent of like, I'm sorry you feel that way when.
You need to own up to it. And I would say, as long as you are owning up to it, then I think an apology is appropriate and in many cases necessary.
But I think, to just to my point, I think that it's okay if that apology comes later, if you want to take time to
learn,
actually
grow,
like be like, like, okay, I need to learn and fully acknowledge what's happened before I jump into an apology, but like actually know like what I did and, you know, why that's the case. Because I just think a lot of the time, I don't know, it's like it's hard for you to fully grasp, especially in the moment when someone's telling you something, like the depths of like the harm that you might have caused. You know what I mean? Like, I even now I reckon he's probably doesn't really come to terms, you know, struggling to come to terms with the idea of like how much damage he probably caused to, you know, someone like Harold, who, you know, was so hot at the time. You know what I mean? And like, hasn't done a whole
he's got
lot
a show
since,
now,
and
though.
I wouldn't even be surprised if that's
he's actually
not...
got a he's on a show called From that's a horror show.
That's very
I
mean,
we haven't watched it,
folks.
But I've heard it's great.
Hey, Jeremy, whoa, you can't call it a horror show.
Come
on.
Oh
my man's out here working really hard.
He's got he's
like,
a lead, actually. He's the lead on this horror show.
Strong words, dude. strong words, dude.
But I do, I think I will say, if you want an example of a I would say a YouTube apology that was well done, or at least probably better done than a lot of the other ones. I know iDubbbz, the creator, recently issued an apology for his previous content, basically owning up to having helped perpetuate racism and fed into a culture of it, and that he may not have realized it at the time, but he was doing a lot of harm, and he apologized to people. And this is after years of him pivoting away from making those sorts of videos.
Yeah.
So similar to Damon Lindelof, who has now done Watchmen, and which is a hard pivot away, and like, I think a great example of like a pro-black show, a pro-black superhero show.
Yeah,
no less.
Really. Yeah.
Hugely. iDubbbz had also pivoted away. Another example would be Dan Harmon. If you want to watch his apology, he gave an apology on his podcast for the way that he had treated Megan Gans, the writer, back when they were both on Community. A lot of basically sexual harassment. That sort of thing. And she had publicly called him out on Twitter, and he gave like a really, he went into detail about his behavior and why he did it. And basically was like, everything I did was wrong. And here's why. And here's the harm I was doing. And please learn from my example. Don't do this. Be aware. And it's like a completely different, I guess is the lesson that I take from this. And also just hats off to these, to Maureen Ryan and to all the people who are willing to come forward.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Say things.
Yeah,
because I think it's important that this was exposed, and I'm glad that it's out there now, and I'm look forward to the book coming out. I'll probably end up reading the book now that I've read this, and I hope that I hope that Carlton Cuse sees the error of his ways.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
I think we got there's a couple things on the list that we might hit before then, like hell freezing over and other such unnatural occurrences. I would like to do one quick shout out to Daniel Day Kim playing Fire Lord Ozai in the new Avatar, like The Last Airbender. Like, for that alone, I will watch the new Avatar series. The trailer has left me a little cold. Honestly, at this point, I'm like,
interesting.
We don't need it, but I'm glad he's getting
it. But it can win me over. We don't need it. But Daniel Day Kim is Fire Lord Ozai.
What bone structure that man has. Just throw it, like, what incredible bone structure.
Oh,
those, that jawline.
Truly.
Them cheekbones.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, whilst we're actually on, whilst we're just as a little fun thing to wrap up, and we're talking about pop culture and stuff, have we watched the One Piece?
Oh, I'm not.
No, I haven't.
Because if Avatar: The Last Airbender trailer left me cold, the One Piece trailer,
I've never watched or read any of it.
Like
I've never watched or read any of it, so I didn't watch the trailer.
Oh, yeah, I used
Jeremy,
to love
I don't know why I assumed
One Piece.
You were like a One Piece girly. Like, I don't know why. I just assumed that you would be super.
I'm a sort of a loose DBZ girly, I would say.
Okay.
Oh, I'm a big DBZ girly to the point where, like, I couldn't go through watching the live action. Like, I have already been so scarred by the live action DBZ.
Dragon Ball Evolution.
I'm not even going to call it DBZ, because it wasn't. It just wasn't. Like, whatever the fuck it was not Dragon Ball Z. I refuse to even remotely acknowledge that came from the same source material, because it was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, the One Piece one is like, I don't know, there's something about these which I'm like, I'm left a little bit like, animation as the medium works for these shows, and I just fundamentally don't know if making a one-to-one kind of version will ever really work. I think you need to change the format somehow. You know what I mean? Make it more of like inspired by, as opposed to like a shot-for-shot kind of, you know, because I will say this though, the kid playing Aang does seem absolutely perfect. Like, I watched a video of him on the red carpet and I was like, oh my god, this, like, he literally is so Aang.
I love that.
Like, there's like one bit, it's so cute. It's so cute where he's on the red carpet with the guy who plays Zuko, and they ask like, oh, what like element would you be? And basically the guy playing Zuko was like, honestly, fire's the best, it beats everyone, so I'd be fire. Like, proper Zuko kind of. And the kid playing Aang just goes, okay, as your friend, I think that's kind of evil, but I still love you. I'm like, oh my god, that's so perfect. And that was just like on the red carpet, and I was like, wow.
I
like,
can't
they
wait.
Nailed
that's
that
so
costume.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited for that. I think it'd be cool to see how they pull some stuff off.
By the way.
But anyway, Liv,
yes,
any closing
I would love
remarks?
To
any
say, yeah. I, so you might notice that I was just kind of mostly like, like this episode, because I was like, I've not seen Lost, but like it was really interesting to hear, and I really hope that like people, you know, I think it was a product of its time. I think that societally we've moved on. And hopefully, fingers crossed, if something like this happened now, some people would be immediately be like, no, fuck that, you know, no, absolutely not. I would fingers crossed hope that would be the case. Also, there are a few things I referenced previously that I wanted to bring up. Number one, I mentioned Father Ted. I will say that the creator is, I think, a known transphobe, so fuck transphobes and trans rights. Just so everyone knows. Also, there was a book that I referenced, which is it's by Zadie Smith, and it's called NW. Is the book that I mentioned before, that where like it's the norm that like the neutral is that people of color are being described without their skin tone being mentioned, and then when a white person comes in, the skin tone is mentioned, and it's a subversive thing, and it's really interesting.
It's always
also,
food. Do they always use food? Like they're cream colored or mayonnaise?
Cream colored, vanilla toned skin. Oh yeah,
nice baking soda.
I've had enough of mocha skin tones. But yes, and also highly recommend seeing like a video. The video that I found out about this book from is by I'm not going to be able to pronounce this correctly, but it's Yhara Zayd, Yara Zayd, I think, on YouTube. And they made a video that's called The Day Rue Became Black, which is about have you seen it?
It's such a good video.
Okay. About how people reacted when Rue was cast in the Hunger Games, and just people kicked off because they were like, oh, I didn't think of Rue as black. And it's like, literally, she is described in the book as black, having dark skin. Mm-hmm. And the fact that like she was described as having dark skin, and the person who actually played her is mixed race. And so there was still an element of like toning things down. And it's just about how like being black in cinema and in media is kind of always
it can be very poorly received, and like, yeah, like, just, it's just baffling. And then also there's a lot of stuff going on right now with the fact that like the new Magic the Gathering set has Aragorn and he's black, like there's a, which is fucking sick.
Oh, it's such so amazing good. It's so good. Oh my but,
like,
god,
yeah, like it's jeez, just interesting, it's just a topic I'm super interested in right now. But yeah, highly recommend that video, very very good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's pretty tiring being described as like woke, or in fact, I actually found a video. I was on like a random, I should never have done, like, I was doing it basically. My agent was like, oh, can you send me like stuff that you've done like online, you know, so I can like link it to people and whatever. And so I was like, oh, sure. I didn't have anything to hand. So I was just like going on YouTube and typing in like right through my Halfling, stuff like that.
Oh, no.
And like I found this like random guy who was like just going on this like tirade about like, why does everyone obsess with three black halflings? They've only posted this many videos and only got a couple thousand subscribers. By the way, this guy had 350 subscribers. We got over 2,000 and was getting vexed because we had followers. But the funniest thing was that he was just like, why do people keep talking about these guys? They haven't barely posted anything. And I was like,
no.
Like, dude, we're not.
No,
we're,
I know.
Is this a YouTube video?
Like, it was just like so... Yeah, yeah, this is a YouTube video. Whoa. I'll see if I can find
it. No, like during when we released the interview during the OGL stuff, and that went kind of viral-ish. People were like referencing us as a YouTube channel, and then also saying like, these guys are shit, they haven't posted anything else. And it's like, we're fucking podcasts, sorry.
Podcast,
which we branch into video, but now you're making it scary and weird.
We're a podcast, and I guarantee you we get a lot more listeners.
There was a person on Twitter who was saying like, why did they speak to these people, they're barely known. And I was like, well, actually, I actually came in and was like, no, we're actually primarily an audio podcast, and we have all these other and look at who we've had on the show. And he's like, I mentioned Matthew Mercer. He's like, see, tells me everything I need to know. You think Critical Role equals D&D? And I was like,
it is no, D&D. Just that they're very good,
well-known people in the sphere.
I mean, if you want to go there, then like Critical Role has a lot more followers than D&D does. So and honestly. Honestly, they're probably better custodians of the game than like the goes right now. So I'm just, hey, look, I said it. Okay, like I said it. Anyway, before this gets any spicy, I really enjoyed this conversation as always. I feel like this is like a return to form. All of us having good old fashioned rants about race. It's just like, let's get stuck in. I love it. So, before we go, Olivia Kennedy, please tell everyone where they can find you on the
Twitter. I am over on Twitter. Sorry, I was taken aback by everything I just did. I'm on Twitter. At Does Dark Magic. I'm everywhere else at Olivia Does Dark Magic. Including Twitch. Jeremy, you've been talking about your Twitch recently. I'm trying my best to do more streams. But yes, I'm twitch.tv/OliviaDoesDarkMagic. And then also you can go check out youtube.com/dicebreaker, where I do video things, and there's some exciting stuff coming up. Some exciting stuff where possibly, maybe Jasper and Jeremy will be involved. I don't know. Maybe. So go ahead and subscribe. That'd be cool. And then also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is not our main thing. youtube.com/3blackhalflings.
Do subscribe, because it is great. The stuff that's on there is great.
It's not our main thing. We're doing our best. Look, I'm working hard, as hard as I can, but there's so much, gang. But yeah, go ahead and check it out.
Oh, man.
It is me now.
Jeremy.
Just before, I wanted to throw out a tweet that I really, really loved that was about this situation. Somebody tweeted out, this is a Watchmen quote from the original book. Well, it's based on a Watchmen quote from Dr. Manhattan. It is 2007. The WGA is on strike. We are canceling Lost. It is 2023. The WGA is on strike. We are canceling Lost. And I just thought that was an absolute brilliant. And
very good.
Yes,
very good. Very sad. Yes, playwrights.
And he's,
come on.
Right here is a quote from Carlton Cuse to Harold Perrinet saying, "You don't have enough work. You said you don't have enough work here, so we're letting you go." When he was fired. Oh, yep. Brutal. But yes, you can find me on Twitter at JeremyCobb1. It's Cobb with two B's and the number one. You can find me on Instagram at the Cobbmeister. And you can find me on be streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive. I stream on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And I also on the Quantum Reactor. If you want to hear me talk about science fiction in a lot more detail about the actual work itself, who knows? Maybe we'll do Lost eventually. You can check us out wherever pods are cast, the Quantum Reactor. I co-host that show with Andrew Coons, friend of the show, and we are also on Twitter at QReactorShow, and join our Discord. I think the link is in the description of our episodes. So yeah, go check all that out as well.
Nice. You can follow me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias. You can check me out on Games and Feelings. You can check me out on the Pointless Capture podcast, and you can check me out on this next season of Dark Dice, which is, I'm very, very excited about that coming out. So that's probably about us. It for us at Three Black Halflings. Please follow the show at Three Black Halflings. That's the number Three Black Halflings. Check out our Patreon, where you can get this episode without any ads. You can also get bonus episodes, hangouts, all kinds of stuff, and goodies like that. Check out our Patreon. And we also have merch, and we will be making merch announcements soon. Things are coming. Things are coming. So make sure you check that out. Get ready. Strap in. It's coming. That's about it for us. So, yeah. I'll see you next week.
So long,
Jeffo. So long, Jeffo.
Hello.
So
long,
Jeffo. Before we wrap up this episode, it's about that time that we say thank you to some very special people. People who have joined the Three Black Halflings Patreon. We want to thank you so much for helping us keep this show going and helping us make cool stuff.
Thank you.
And we're changing it up because it's not just one of us here. We're all here. Thank you. You wonderful people.
Hi. This is great because I never know if I do this right. So this is fun.
we're gonna sit and judge you now.
Okay.
Three contrasting styles coming in hot.
Very contrasting styles. I'm the angry thanker.
Okay.
So that's what
Thanks
I'm gonna
a
do.
Lot.
Thank you, Calibra. Thank you so much.
Are you going to assign us
joining
roles?
Joining our Patreon.
We're going to figure out the roles as we go, Liv.
I see.
Hit us with your... Yeah, hit us with it.
I've done my first one, so I'm good.
Yeah, Calibra, thank you so much. I stole it again because I feel like I interrupted the first one. Okay. 20 on the dice from YouTube. Please subscribe. Thank you so
the
much.
I love that
so much.
Hey.
Also, absolutely love the hustle of calling yourself 20. Please, 20 on the dice from YouTube. Please subscribe.
No, 20 on the dice from YouTube.
That is
with
up there
period
with me
at the end,
trying
a full
to
stop.
That's up there with me trying to get Jeremy, trying to get guests to give Jeremy a nickname, which is just branding. Like Jeremy Roll20 Cop.
Yeah.
So love that. Jeremy, you go.
Hey, it's Tom Church. Thanks, buddy. Hope you're doing well. Much appreciated, Tom.
Yeah.
Parasocial relationship
I would like
tanker.
To thank. Yeah. Well,
I've actually met. I've actually
know.
Met
he
Tom
does
in person.
Know Tom
oh, fair
I actually
enough.
Do
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
Tom in person. I DM'd for Tom at D&D Castle.
Carry it on.
And Tom's awesome. He's a great player.
Cool.
Nice. I would like to thank Wandering Heron. You're fantastic, and I really appreciate your support.
If you don't mind, I would love to say thank you to Joseph Rogers, who is a really cool person and a supporter, and I Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey, Joshua Hunnix, it's you. We haven't met.
Kenzie Tartaglione, you're so fantastic, and maybe you're even on the show, which is just really cool because you have a great show called Queer
RPG. Quibbergy.
Listen to
it's
it.
It's Queer RPG.
It's not Queer RPG. It's Queer. It's Queer. No way.
It's Queer PG, which makes it Queer RPG.
Yeah.
Queer RPG.
Okay, so this one's a bit out of left field. I'm really sorry if it's wrong, but I want to say thank you to Castle. Thank you so much. It's just a big castle that I found out about, and I think it's neat. I just wanted to say it. Thank you so much, Castle. Thank you. Thank you.
I love the idea that a literal castle has sponsored our show.
Lumley Castle is sponsored.
Oh my god, so sick.
Thank you, Lumley. And it's you, Captain Kazno. We haven't met either, but I wish you a great day.
Oh, Nate P! Why? Why are you so cool and so amazing? Ha! Just carry on supporting us. It really helps.
So this one's a bit weird. So this one time I was out in the forest and I picked a plum out of a bush and I was like, oh, this is lovely. Oh, I'm going to eat it. Yeah. And then I went to put it to my mouth and then turned into the plum satyr, who I would like to thank. I would like to thank them for everything they do.
Ate the plum satyr?
No, I didn't, Jasper. I just wanted to I wanted to thank them for supporting the show and also for turning back into their
true. Oh, it's you, David Altus. That's you! He old so and so. Thanks. Thanks, buddy. David
this is slowly
Altus.
Turning into DJ Khaled.
We out here.
David Altus, yeah.
My favorite system to play is myself.
We out here doing it. Oh, I want to tell you. Oh, myself. I want to tell you guys about someone who I used to know who turns out has the same damn name as one of our patrons. I don't know if it's the same one. I really doubt it because it's a friend from school back when I was like a kid. But they were also called Callum Scott. And they were a really nice person as well. The same as you are, Callum Scott, for supporting the show.
Hey guys, it's Liv again. And I just wanted to say a big thank you to Gellert. You mean the world to me, and I really wanted to thank you for everything you do. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you so much. Thank you, Gellert.
Liv, that was incredible. You tripped up over the word Gellert, but in a way that was just so truly feeble. It was incredible. You were like, Gellert. It was like you were having an allergic reaction to the name. That was absolutely spectacular.
Thank you so much. It's just like, I just revert to like the way I would normally be if I weren't on a podcast. You know?
it's my main person, Nick Lampier. Or is that pronounced Lamphier? Or Lamphier? Or Lamphire? Regardless of how it's pronounced, thank you, Nick. Lamphier? You're my favorite.
Ooh.
If it's not, maybe you should make it that.
I think it's Lamphire. I think it's Lamphire. Maybe change it.
Maybe consider changing it.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a nickname given to you from Jeremy. Ooh. So
there we go. And would you look at that? Jeremy's thing has stopped recording for him. So that seems like a good time to go ahead and wrap this up. I'm just going to say, if you would like your name to be read out and get other similar bonuses, then please feel free to check out the Three Black Halflings Patreon. But until then, we will talk to you next week. We've already said so long, shy folk. So Daniel, just fade us out into nothingness. Bye.
Apparently, this is goodbye. Oh, sorry.
That was a HeadGum Podcast. That was a HeadGum Podcast.